topic for today is entitled The Impact of the Modern Theosophical Movement.
Good morning. We have presented to us in this reading an expectation by H.P. Blavatsky that if the present attempt in the form of the modern theosophical movement succeeds, the expectation was that the impact would extend into the 20th and 21st century. And she gave us some general signposts so we might be able to consider what that impact is. And she highlights that the general condition of the mind and heart of humanity will have been improved, that many of the prejudices and dogmatic illusions that hampered and characterized the 19th century would have been to some extent removed, and that the general level and tenor and attitude of society in the 21st century compared to the 19th century would be improved. That in its broadest expectation. But as to organized theosophical efforts, she expected that in total, there would be an organized, living, healthy body of effort and a large, accessible literature available to humanity, able to reach every household if necessary, and a numerous and united body of people who could be identified and characterized as being true servants of humanity, and united primarily by the principle of universal unity, or if we want to call it in the term she used it, universal brotherhood. So the purpose of this talk this morning is to look at this expectation, to see to what extent it has been realized, but also to give us a basis from which we can identify what continued work needs to be done. And it is important to note that she said that this impact on society at large would bloom despite the obstructive karma of the race in the 19th and 20th century. So it's interesting that she had a foreknowledge, if we want to call it that, of not only the fruit of the efforts, but also the obstacles and difficulties that humanity would face in the 20th and 19th centuries. We want to begin with this idea that when considering the scope of the theosophical movement, the movement, its impact includes, but is not exclusive to the formation of the Theosophical Society in 1875 by H.P. Blavatsky, William Q. Judge, and H.S. Olcott, nor is it exclusive to any organization or association that calls itself theosophical, nor is it exclusive to the teachings and ideas of any individual who might not necessarily call themselves theosophists or students of theosophy, and yet it is clear by their ideas and work that they share and are motivated by the same principles. So at the time of the establishment of the modern theosophical movement, which we can date at 1875, the lines laid down of unity, of aim, purpose, and teaching, which were to carry the movement forward into the 20th and 21st century, are succinctly expressed in the three objects of the theosophical movement. And just to review them for a moment, they are to form the nucleus of a universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. Second, the study of ancient and modern religions, philosophies, and sciences, and the demonstration of the importance of such study. And thirdly, the investigation of the unexplained laws of nature and the psychical or hidden powers latent in the human being. Now, there are references to the great founders of the theosophical movement. And we get some words by William Q. Judge in The Ocean of Theosophy that can help direct us to who these founders are. And he states that humanity has never been without a friend. The great founders of the theosophical movement, we might call them the elder brothers of humanity, have progressed far beyond the average capacity of human beings in the course of evolution. They continuously watch over the progress of the less progressed, continuously seek for opportunities to draw attention to the truths regarding the destiny of the soul, and are ready when cyclic law permits and provides the opportunity to use their knowledge to benefit humanity in many different ways. So we might want to form in our mind a definite idea of what do we mean by the theosophical movement, because we don't want to confuse it with any particular organization or expression of that movement. So the theosophical movement is the ebb and flow, the cyclical ebb and flow of ideas that have the force to free the mind from materialism, dogmatism, superstition, prejudice, selfishness, the chains of the senses, passions, and narrow separative ideas. They have the power to elevate aspirations and thoughts to the ideal of human progress and perfectibility, physically, mentally, morally, and spiritually. They have a power to raise the perception of human beings to a larger realm that is all-inclusive and all-pervading. Now, it is important to note that these ideas have been present in ancient and modern times, Eastern and Western locations, in all different philosophies and religions, even sciences. And they are not necessarily called theosophy or theosophical. And yet the ideas point to a definite body or perception of truths which are all pervasive, universal, if we want to say. So although we're using the term theosophy and theosophical, these ideas themselves are timeless and were present among humanity even before the term theosophy and theosophical became more popular in use. So the impact of these ideas is necessarily tempered by the prevailing conditions, sentiments, thoughts, and moral ideals of the nation, race, or civilization to which it comes. The personages, institutions, and associations that serve to focus and direct the manifestations of these ideas may vary with the times, but the ideas themselves are timeless because they are expressions of universal and eternal truths. But before considering the nature of some of these ideas that characterize the teachings of theosophy and theosophical movement, as well as their impact in modern times, it may be helpful to consider the obstacles and conditions that confronted and continue to confront the movement in the West and the spread of theosophical truths and their exemplification and practice. So what were and are the obstacles in the 19th, 20th, and 21st century? Well, going back to the 19th century, we'll say 1875, the liberation of science from the chains of religious dogma, the development of the scientific method, and major discoveries in physics, chemistry, and medicine led to the ascendancy of science and technology as the characteristic trademark of the modern age. Every religious doctrine and philosophical proposition was held up against the standard of demonstrable scientific facts and their theories of the origin of life, man, and the cosmos. Primarily materialistic in its scope of inquiry and investigation, its conclusions were necessarily materialistic. There was remarkable skepticism and prejudice against any explanation or discovery about non-material dimensions that challenged its conclusions. Obviously, there developed criticism of the biblical teachings on the origin of man and cosmos as the gulf between science and religion seemed to grow larger with every new scientific discovery. On the social scene, we had the Industrial Revolution, the expansion of national empires, shifting of large segments of the population into crowded cities, while leading to the growth of the middle class. It increased the gap of opportunity between the wealthy and the poor and set the stage for the conflicts of the 20th century that played out in world wars and revolutions of the masses. The religion of the time was materialistic in its own way, as it was characterized by crystallized dogmas that distinguished and divided one sect from another, and separated one religion from another with barriers of superstition, prejudice, pride, and fear. The teachings of the church still held the minds and lives of millions in chains, even though its ability to force those ideas on people with violence and torture had been limited by political, social, and scientific changes. There was little understanding or awareness of the ancient religions, philosophies, and literature of the East. Now, in the 20th century, we witnessed the most violent, destructive, and deadly wars in recorded human history. It witnessed the disintegration of social, political, cultural institutions that left millions struggling to find meaning, purpose, and their individual identity. For the first time in recorded history, humanity lived under the constant threat of nuclear holocaust and self-annihilation of all life on Earth. The electrical and digital revolution only added to the toxic distribution of industrial waste and poisoning of our environment. After a period of some reintegration into society of marginalized groups and reconciliation between warring nations in the last 20th quarter of the 20th century, the first quarter of the 21st century seems on the surface to be marked by a move of the pendulum back toward polarization and intolerance towards differences of opinion, perspective, and condition. There has been a reemergence of fundamentalism, dogmatism, racism, sexism, nationalism, bigotry, intolerance, and censorship of expression. To many, the world seems to be in a more disharmonious and maybe even dangerous condition than it was even 15 to 20 years ago. Fortunately, the time had come for the theosophical movement, theosophy, and theosophists of every nation and race to step up and make an impact with their words and deeds. And once again, a theosophist is considered anyone who serves the true who serves in the true service and cause of humanity and is not identified necessarily by what they call themselves or their name, but rather what motivates them in their heart and what ideas and ideals do they live by. So what then are some of the fundamental principles or themes or ideas that characterize theosophy and the theosophical movement? And we think an understanding of these ideas will help us identify the impact. So in the philosophy, we have expressed what we call the three fundamental propositions. And although in the literature they are expressed in very definite and even metaphysical terms, it is the task of the student to assimilate these ideas and being able to not only live them, but to express them in their own words so that they are more understood by others. And these ideas, being universal, timeless, eternal truths, are said to be impacted in the spiritual nature of human beings and only require the right conditions to come forth into further awareness, expression, and potency. As Plato taught, ideas rule the world. It is through these ideas held and promulgated in the minds of human beings that the theosophical movement has made its impact in modern times, despite the obstacles we just mentioned. Wherever thought has struggled to be free, there is to be found the traces and impact of the theosophical movement. So these three fundamental principles or fundamental propositions, which are said to be self-proving because they are, in a sense, impacted already in our inner spiritual nature, might be summarized as deity, law, and evolution. And HPB spoke of a language that would be coming forth in the 20th century. And we thought it'd be interesting to present these basic ideas, not as we would present them both from the platform, but in the terms of the language that is already out there in society, terms that we find repeated again and again in art, in literature, in song, in the movies, by various reformers, by professors, common terms that express these same ideas. So when it comes to deity, we hear expressed the idea of the underlying unity and source of all, the unity of life and consciousness, an all-pervading spiritual reality, whether we call it the universal energy or the universal source. It is the foundation of the ground of all being. And so there is a profound interconnectedness of all of life. And therefore, it invites a deep reverence for all life and a deep commitment and realization of human solidarity, since all human beings are bound up together in this one source. And as a result of this inner spiritual reality, there are hidden forces of nature. There is an inner wisdom about nature, not just an outer worldly knowledge, but an inner wisdom that can be directly known. We might call it a universal wisdom or a spiritual wisdom that transcends and includes and can be found in all different philosophies and religions. And there are various terms that come up for it. So all these modern expressions that have permeated our society and have had impact in so many ways are fundamentally universal themes expressed in the Theosophical teachings. And then when it comes to the idea of universal law of cycles, reincarnation and karma, those ideas have become, we would say, household words in our times. And it's interesting that a recent poll of these ideas showed that in America, 55% of people believe in karma, what goes around comes around, or cause and effect, you reap what you sow. 27% believe in reincarnation in one form or another. Two-thirds believe that everything is interconnected. 26% meditate. And this is interesting. 47% believe that spirituality and science are not mutually exclusive. Now, that is not that religious doctrines or religion and science are mutually exclusive, but this underlying spiritual reality is not mutually exclusive of our scientific, material, physical reality. They're all interconnected. And then, of course, we have the Theosophical idea of evolution. And if we were to express it in modern terms, we would have it expressed this way, that there is a spiritual evolution and development, and it is an evolution of consciousness. A self-conscious spiritual awakening can occur in an individual, which results in an inner transformation and a spiritual liberation from worldly concerns, from narrow ideas, from prejudice, from a wider purpose in life. And this makes up our spiritual journey. The themes of many modern movies and literature has involved this spiritual journey, this crisis of identification, and also involves and develops a spiritual ethics, which takes in all of life, how we treat each other, how we treat the lower kingdoms of nature, an ethics that incorporates this understanding that we're all connected. So how have these ideas, these general ideas that are now present wherever you look in our modern society, how have they become expressed practically? And we will see that they are all expressions of the three objects of the Theosophical movement. We know that among people and among, and even in religious institutions and universities, there is an intense study of comparative religions and the interdenominational faith and cooperation among Eastern and Western religious leaders in order to tackle, to come together to bring their various ideas and come up with an approach of how to solve the conflicts, the difficulties of our time, whether it's in segregation or poverty or economic turmoil or protecting the environment, to bring the thought of all our different religions to it. An intense study, not just of Western religions, but also Eastern religions, science, religion, and philosophy. And as we'll see when we look into particular individuals, they did not necessarily call themselves theosophists, although some of them were. Some of them even were members of the Theosophical Society. But in their investigations, they looked at Eastern and Western, ancient and modern ideas, and came up with principles and ideas which we are identified with as theosophical. And there have been efforts among scientists and religion to get together and find a basis for underlying unity. There have been efforts in departments of psychology at Duke, at Arizona, at Virginia to investigate the hidden nature of the human being and to investigate the hidden departments of nature, which we call the paranormal or the psychic. Many of our terms, the near-death experiences coined by Moody, or the reincarnation studies done by Ian Stevenson, were done by individuals who had direct contact with theosophy, either through their own individual efforts or their family was involved. And we also have the whole paranormal investigations by J.B. Ryan, who came up with the term ESP, that made the study of psychical phenomena a respected scientific endeavor. So these are all the general ideas and impacts that we've seen that have come forth into the 21st century. Now, we want to, that's the movement, that's the ideas. But what we also saw established was the putting down in print of the most complete expression of what we might call the ancient wisdom religion, which we call today in its modern expression, theosophy. But aspects of this are presented down through the ages. And we find in theosophy, and this is what we study together at the United Lodge of Theosophists, we find the philosophical, the scientific, the ethical foundation for the practical realization of these truths, how each one of us can prove these ideas to ourselves, these inherent ideas, and apply them in our everyday lives. So there have been individuals who either identified themselves as theosophists, were members of the Theosophical Society, who were familiar with the teachings of theosophy from their family, colleagues, or individual research into Eastern religion, Eastern philosophy, Western occult traditions, and mysticism. And they literally influenced hundreds, thousands, millions, as they were artists, composers, authors, educators, university professors, political and religious leaders, and social reformers. And we don't want to take the time to go in this organized presentation to mention all of them specifically, or even many of them, but we can bring them forth in our back and forth discussion. But we just wanted to highlight too that all these themes that we talked about pervade the two most significant and all-pervasive cultural influences in our society today, and that is Star Wars and the Harry Potter series, which has been seen and translated into more versions around the world in all different languages. And the people from 35 to 45 years who are the leaders and shapers and drivers of our civilization all grew up entertained, permeated, influenced by these ideas. And all of these themes we mentioned are found expressed in those works. But there are many other efforts, but we just wanted to mention it there. So is the 21st century compared to the 19th century a heaven? Well, we got a lot of work to do. We're only in the first quarter, and the true blooming of the effort in the 21st century won't be seen until the last quarter of the 21st century. But we do see a disintegration, almost a repugnance of the creeds and dogmas, social and caste prejudice, racial and national antipathies and barriers. We even see in science that dogmatic materialism is now extending to an interaction between mind and subtle states of matter and energy, and definitely a greater appreciation of Eastern religion and philosophy, meditation, the popularization of Buddhism, especially by the influence and popularity of the Dalai Lama. So we could go on and on, but we're sure that you and your own contacts and research have found many aspects of this modern impact of the theosophical movement. So we would like just to take a break here and open it up to your questions and comments on this subject. No, Theosophy Hall. Unmute.
We certainly find it interesting, the teachings of theosophy, how they emphasize how a new cycle is started at the beginning of the third quarter of every century of a spiritual impulse. And we know that was the theosophical impulse in the 1800s. It was literally the impulse that we saw in 1776 in the United States was part of that impulse. And so let's look at 1975 to 2000. There were so many enormous changes in the world, not the least of which was an opening of the Western mind to the New Age movement with reincarnation and karma, but also of seemingly infinite communication. It all started during that period of time with computers and telecommunication.
Yes. Well, yes. Well, we'll just focus on the 20th century since most of us had more direct contact with it, personal. So, well, we definitely saw a popularity of Eastern philosophy to the point where it became an alternative religion for many in the West and an alternative lifestyle. And even the adoption of meditative practices were identified with the Eastern teachers that came over. We saw religious interfaith dialogue. Now, the original Parliament of World Religions, which was organized by theosophists in 1893, was reestablished after 100 years in 1993, mostly with the influence of theosophists, but it has continued annually as part of the interfaith movement. We see these, we've talked about the influence of Hinduism and Buddhism, but we also have this, what we call the New Age or the New Thought movement. And beyond the practices, which we could analyze and go into at another time, we do see that in all those areas, there is a continent of thought that is basically built on these same ideas, that whoever is involved with New Age thought, whether it's in science, religion, philosophy, education, the whole idea by way of holistic education, for example, in the Montessori method, has spread forth into our public systems as well. The whole idea of holistic health, a holistic medicine, mind, body, and spirit, had its birth and its impetus in the last century. We talked about parapsychology, near-death experiences, the further development of quantum mechanics, the ecology movement, deep ecology, the interconnection, the concern about the environment. And how we don't want to overlook, obviously, the connection between the theosophical movement, the theosophists, Mahatma Gandhi, who was directly influenced by theosophists and the Bhagavad Gita, Martin Luther King, who was directly influenced by Gandhi, Albert Schweitzer, who was influenced and actually met with and studied with theosophists in India, and the resulting civil rights, women's rights. By the way, Gloria Steinem was a deep student of theosophy, and her mother was very active in theosophical groups. You mentioned Montessori and so forth. So once again, in that last quarter of the 19th century, we see an explosion coming up within the hearts and minds of individuals from individuals who may not even have ever heard theosophy, just coming forth spontaneously with these ideas. And that upward impulse is said to be characteristic of the last 25 years of every century. It's a cycle, and the movement itself works with that cycle, just as we work with the cycles of the ocean, if we're trying to navigate our boats or swim, even walk on the shore, we have to work in harmony with those waves. Yes, MDW.
Not yet.
We'll come back to that theosophy. MDW.
Yes, it seems that there's an impulse in the last 25 years, but then the next 75 years is the assimilation of that impulse. And I guess within that impulse, there must be a lot of turmoil, because the ideas are changing and ways of approaching them are also changing. But also, you have the stagnation of those that do not want to change.
Yes.
So, you know, we live in a time of what, great transition, is what they are saying?
Well, it is a time of transition, of assimilation. But if we go back to the ancient wisdom expressed in the Bhagavad Gita, light and dark are the world's eternal ways. And even in the East, there's this idea of the yin and the yang, and the symbolic of the black circle present within the white circle, and the white circle involved with the black circle. In other words, there is never completely dark or light. They're all intermixed, but there are times when the spiritual is more predominant and the material is in the background. And there are other times when the materialistic and separative are more to the fore and the spiritual is in the background. Now, in this first 25 years, even though there is this underlying effort that is progressive, the deep ecology, the interfaith movement, the prevalence of theosophical ideas, the digital revolution, and even the pandemic has led to an opportunity for the dissemination and the interconnection of not only ULT, but theosophists of all walks and denominations to have a global presence and to disseminate and talk about these ideas. And of course, the advances in science, in spite of all the problems, the polarization that makes us feel uncertain and unsafe at times, there is still this undercurrent, this unshakable undercurrent that people can identify and work with. And it's like a seed. It's like a seed gathering strength. And instead of coming up a new cycle of opportunity, it'll explode forth in the last quarter in harmony with the rise and the change in the human condition at that time, and be expressed in even greater ways than it was at the end of the last century. So it is our duty basically to help keep that impulse going, keep it alive in our own hearts. NH, will come back to you, but Theosophy of All had a hand up.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting the fact that you mentioned the quarters that we're transitioning through that represent different ideas or different moods, different tones. But additionally, the astrological cycles, the 2050 or 2150 year transitions that we go through, where each entrance into that new age is supposed to be, or at least mentioned to be, fraught with challenges as you're moving from one age to the other. And you're definitely seeing that here. But I think you're also seeing, especially you had mentioned the pandemic and how it shut down the world or people were able to sit at home and think and give attention to certain ideas. And now you're seeing those ideas come to fruition with everything from AI to all the different advancements that we're seeing take place that truly speak to the age of Aquarius and a new way of thinking.
Yes, very interesting. Yes, NH, Miami, did I pronounce your name? Yes, you had your hand up?
Yeah, so I wanted to touch on the guy that was talking about the resistance, what he feels to this changing of the tides, right? And I think what this other speaker just mentioned about the water barrier, Aquarius age, right? So the water barrier, the problem I see with people who are resistant to the change is that a bridge needs to be made. Right, so I've been getting a lot into symbology and Mercury and Thoth, and all of this keeps coming up. You spoke about you spoke about mind, body, soul. I think that's what in the past has been more about mind. Everything is about them being mind. It's either dogmatic or, you know, over intellectualizing things. And so we have these Eastern traditions coming in with the yoga, and I see a lot of people up there in breathwork. When we start integrating the body, when we start the water barrier, when we start caring about other people's emotions, I think a bit of psychology and a lot of this, it's called somatic healing, right? I think more about integrating, that bridge can be built by integrating more of that body part. I think in the past we've been hyperfixated on the mind too much. There hasn't been enough about the body, and the emotions speak to the body. So that's what I would add.
Well, thank you. The contribution just expressed so easily and naturally in everyday terms. The central ideas of that idea, remember, in the 19th century would have been unheard of. And there would have been so much resistance to it. And yet now it can be easily recognized by anybody as just opening their eyes and opening their ears and listening to the world around them. They come to realize these thoughts. So 5,000 years ago, we had a book or a teaching put forth in the Bhagavad Gita, and it opens up in the middle of a war. And the warfare is between two families or two sides of the same family. One that is progressive, that wants to move towards the higher, to be more spiritual, all-inclusive, less selfish. And the other, made up of their own family members at times, their own teachers, their own childhood friends and close associates who were still tied to, married to, couldn't let go of the older ways, the materialistic, and they're engaged in this battle. Now, ultimately, the progressive win because evolution is ever moving forward. Evolution is always pushing us forward, not just physically, but also mentally and spiritually. Yes, we may have cycles where we see the slow down, but evolution, the very law of it, is pushing us forward. And so that's where we are now. We find large masses of our society that have a certain vision of how we should move forward, and yet a large mass of society that still clings to their own ideas from the past. The ideas from the past still have a hold on large numbers of us. And we might say, if we look at ourselves individually, we are not immune to these influences as well. We may have high aspirations, but we find ourselves also carrying certain limitations, prejudices, suspicions, things that we have to work on ourselves to purify, to eliminate, as well as humanity at large does. So we are part of that process. JCS.
Well, building on the past comment, on occasion, I've heard folks say, well, theosophists all live in their heads. This is an intellectual study. They're not aware of the emotional, the psychological, the astral, et cetera, et cetera. what could we say as modern students to clarify that thinking, that it's not about the head and the intellectual study at all?
Well, individuals who say theosophists all live in their heads might be just looking at theosophists, a certain kind of theosophist, we'll say, who is more of a student who wants to study. And study is important in any endeavor. We have to study, even if we want to study to be doctors and nurses and or artists, we have to do some studying. We want to study the scientific, philosophical, ethic basis. But then the other part, which they don't see, because it's the practical application, it's what theosophists do individually in their own lives, in their relationships, in their work, to express these ideas, to put them in practice, which is the other important thing. What they will see practically in any meeting, especially of ULT, is the application of those principles as we get together. All are encouraged, regardless of their race, creed, sex, condition, or affiliation, what religion they were brought in, what they believe in, whether they're materialistic or fundamentalist, it doesn't matter. As long as if we are devoted to an idea of cooperation with one another to find the truth and to be tolerant and helpful to each other in that endeavor, that's the practical application which we all together. And that's as characteristic of a theosophical association meeting as is the intellectual study. It's the mind and the heart working together. Yes, Theosophy Hall.
There seems to be among ULT attendees about the, is Zoom beneficial or not? There are some that are very positive about it and some that aren't. And one of the things that this student has noticed is that there's a definite lack. We're used to having the, you know, after the meetings, like communal talks, people asking questions, that sort of thing. There's a bond when it's face to face. And although Zoom has definitely, you know, with the pandemic, has definitely helped keep the ideas out there, going forward, though, we think we need to be aware that there is that human bond that is definitely missing.
Well, yes, we're speaking here of the importance of relationships, and many of us who have been studying and coming to these kinds of meetings for years and decades know that it is the sharing of ideas, the relationships, the mutual help that is as attractive and powerful as the teachings themselves. They're about expressions. So it's interesting you mentioned that, because starting in November in our program at United Lodge of Theosophists of Philadelphia, we are going to provide some time after our meetings for those who are interested, either at the lodge or on Zoom, to stay online or to stay on at the lodge and participate in an interactive way, but to just exchange these ideas or talk about them in a very informal way, just to communicate them. It's not an organized class, but just a chance for us to bond and discuss our these things and applications of them. So we will be starting that in November after our Friday evening roundtable for about 15 minutes. And then as time goes on, we will extend it to our Wednesday evening and Sunday morning classes as well. So there is a need. We very much appreciate this opportunity with Zoom to reach out But we also know that whether we're coming to the lodge in person or whether we're participating in Zoom, there is a necessity for understanding and applying the ideas for us to get together as individuals, as persons, so to speak, and talk about them and not just talk about the ideas, but to share our personal experiences. Okay, well, I guess with that, we'll just mention that once again, that next, this coming Wednesday, we're continuing in our Ocean of Theosophy with the subject of evolution, beginnings and endings. And isn't it interesting that in our latest scientific discoveries, cosmological studies of astrophysicists in the 21st century, we're hearing more and more of this abandonment of the Big Bang theory in favor of a localized and a universal continuously coming forth and resolving expression of the universe. So interesting in terms of our teachings. So once again, thank you all for attending, and make it a good day.